Welcome to Vincent Price's Laugh.
Good evening, Elby.
Hey, Andrew. It's nice to see you again.
Thank you. Again. All right. Usually on this show, we talk about macabre, creepy, or just spooky genre-type movies.
Right.
And it's called Vincent Price's Laugh.
So you think that maybe we might talk about Vincent Price movies?
Yes. Periodically, really. We started off the whole show with Monster Club. Which had Vincent Price in it, but he was more bookends. But now we're just digging in straight with a classic Vincent Price film,
The Tingler.
I'm William Castle, and I feel obligated to warn you about the next attraction you will see at this theater. The picture is The Tingler, which I direct. And for the first time in motion picture history, members of the audience, including you, will actually play a part in the picture. You will feel some of the physical reactions, the shocking sensations experienced by the actors on the screen. I guarantee that The Tingler has more shocks per minute than my last film, The House on Haunted Hill. But don't be alarmed. You can protect yourself. When you see the picture, you will be told and remember the instruction how you can guard yourself from attack by The Tingler. And now may I show you a few scenes from The Tingler?
Okay, The Tingler came out in 1957?
59.
59! Okay, I gotta get my facts right. Hold on. So, it came out in 1959. It was directed by William Castle. We'll get into that later. My first experience with anything The Tingler was just seeing little clips, things like that, on TV or, like, compilations.
I had no idea what this movie was about. I'd always heard of it, but I didn't know what it actually was.
Did you ever see the poster?
Maybe.
Yeah, it has him, or the cover of the videotape, whatever. It has the silhouette of The Tingler itself.
Uh-huh.
Which, that's based on an actual creature called a velvet worm.
Oh, yeah?
The design of The Tingler is based on the velvet worm.
Huh.
Well, anyway, what is The Tingler? What is it about?
Vincent Price stars in The Tingler as a scientist. I thought he was a mortician, or not a mortician, but a
he is.
Coroner.
He does autopsies for the state, but
right.
But he's also a scientist. His own private research.
He has a little on the side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Much but, like I'm a graphic designer, illustrator by day, and by night, I'm...
Batman.
No, I'm not. I'm a podcaster.
Oh.
That's a bit different than Batman. Batman's stupid anyway.
Batcast. I don't even like Batman. But anyway, so he's a scientist. He has his own lab in his house. And he has this theory that someone could possibly die of fright if they did not scream from that fright.
There's no release of fright, and that would be through screaming.
Mm-hmm.
There's a force in all of us that science knows nothing about. The force of fear. That it's strong enough to shatter the spinal column, we know. But what it is, what causes it to appear and disappear, we don't know. Someday I hope to find out.
Maybe it's the force that makes your spine tingle when you're scared.
Exactly. Tingle? It can do a great deal more than that. You know, it's odd. I've been experimenting with this force for years. Never had a name for it until now. Now I think I'll call it the Tingler.
Due to this parasite that's in every human being.
We're born with it or something?
I guess so.
They never really establish...
They don't need
how.
To.
How? I know. It's brilliant.
It's 1959. There's
it's
like
brilliant
no...
sci-fi. It's William Castle. It's nonsense. But the sincerity in which it's played is awesome.
I so believe it.
Seriously.
It's true. I'm like, my God, there's this thing in my spine.
The young guy who's really inquisitive, David, and Vincent Price... Because he's not a character. He's just Vincent Price and everything he plays.
That's not true.
But David and Vincent are partners in this lab. And they are doing this experiment in fear. Trying to figure out what causes people to freeze, faint, and perhaps scare somebody to death.
Mm-hmm. By chance, Vincent Price's character, who is named...
Well, first let's say who the cast is.
Okay, so Vincent Price plays Dr. Warren Chapin, and David, his lab assistant, is played by an actor named Daryl Hickman, who happened to be engaged to another actress who was in this movie at the time. Her name was Pamela Lincoln, and she plays Lucy, who is...
Super pretty.
She is the sister of
Warren's
wife. His wife's name is Isabel, and she is played by Patricia Cutts. C-U-T-T-S. Cutts.
Back in the early 40s, Vincent Price did a stage play with her on Broadway.
Oh.
Yeah.
There are a couple of other characters. There is a guy who owns a silent movie theater, which is, at the time, a revival theater. The character's name is Ollie, and he is played by Philip Coolidge, and his wife, Judith, played by Martha Higgins, whose character was actually deaf and mute, which was interesting to me because she was communicating via gesturing, which I don't think was real sign language. I think she was just...
Well, no, really, she did, like, consistent hand motions.
I don't think it was real, though.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not an authority on sign language.
You don't know ASL?
What?
American Sign Language.
I'm like, I'm 35. I'm a lady. And I live in Texas.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd go there.
I know the alphabet. You can do the alphabet. I was in a sorority in college, and our philanthropy was aid to the hearing impaired. So I learned a little bit of sign language. We did a performance once, pictured Napoleon Dynamite, their little sign language song.
Yeah.
But we did Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I don't remember it now. I don't know. It just didn't seem like real sign language to me. It just looked like gestures. And she,
well,
like,
after you said that during the movie, I noticed that some of the things, like when she gestured to how much do I have to pay, she did the same hand motions for I don't want to open the box office and have the patrons pay or whatever.
You well, know, it could be her own system.
It could be, whatever. But it looked consistent, so I mean, it's still believable. I think you're just being a poo-pooer. So this experiment in fear thing is just part of the plot. I don't know, is it the motivator? Yeah, it is the through motivator. He wants to find out what makes people freeze up and seize up. But he's also got this really evil wife.
Yeah.
She's stepping out on him big time.
What was that line? She was like,
you know, Warren, you've lost contact with living people. Nobody means anything to you anymore, unless they're dead. You can root around in them with your sharp little knives. There's a word for you.
There's several for you.
Snap.
There's some pretty clever little comeback lines delivered by Mr. Vincent. Price.
Yeah. Okay, the two innocents in this film are his lab tech and his sister-in-law. And they're dating in the movie. And as trivia has it, they got married eventually in real life.
Mm-hmm.
They're aware of the marital trouble that Warren and his wife have. And they know it's also all the wife's fault.
Isabel went out about an hour ago, Warren.
Yeah.
What are we going to do about her, Warren? She's simply ruining her life.
Oh, it isn't all her fault, Lucy. A husband who spends all his time in the laboratory and hates cocktails and parties and falls asleep at the opera.
She's out almost every night now, Warren, and with men who aren't very nice. I'm ashamed of my sister.
She's super wealthy, but she's born wealthy.
Yeah, she...
never earned it.
Right, and she inherited her father's fortune, and she's accused of poisoning her father in order to get the inheritance.
There's this melodrama backdrop to get to the sci-fi horror element.
She resents him a lot because he works so much. It's one of those situations you see all the time of the wife hates the husband because he has this job that is demanding of him. So he doesn't want to go out with her because, you know, he's doing his research, which is very important to him.
And possibly the world. And her. Yeah. And though he or she's independently wealthy, she doesn't need him for anything. Usually the thing that you're talking about, it's wrapped up in a suburban family, and they really need the father's money.
Right.
So that they can pay off their mortgage, put the kids through school, and all this stuff. And then she's just resentful that he's earning his keep for them.
That he's solving murders and stuff.
It's
like
not
that.
The exact template. Right, solving where you're talking about the cop.
Yeah, it's always a cop. It's like some detective that...
And here he's a scientist who... The fear thing can actually benefit a lot of people in the world. And that's, I think, what his whole thing was. Also, we had previously seen The Fly, which isn't... It sounds like it would be interesting. It's not that interesting of a talk. Mm-hmm. However, that movie was him barely in it.
You're talking about Vincent Price being a supporting character in
The
Fly?
Yeah, when you think of Vincent Price in The Fly, and you see him on The Fly cover, you think that you're going to get him being a scientist.
Yeah, he's going to be the fly.
Or whatever, or come face to face. No, none of that stuff. But in The Tingler, that's where you get it.
Yep.
Actually, I love how sincere he is.
Yeah.
He's conniving in various ways.
I'm not conniving. I would say he...
He doesn't necessarily speak his plan.
Right.
Even though he's not speaking his plan, you can tell that he's got an actual plan and he's trying to put his plan into motion. That's the conniving.
But he does that in a very polite way.
Of course. He's Vincent Price.
I love his smile. He has such a polite smile when he's talking to people. I have this really weird crush on Vincent Price, okay?
It is weird since he's no longer with us.
It's okay. He's very handsome. He has a very unique face.
Yeah. And I am actually sporting a mustache quite like his, but not as good. And I did that at my wife's request, and I look silly for it.
Because I'm a weirdo.
They finally figure something out about the Tingler.
Yeah, they figure out that when you scream, you release this tension and the Tingler retracts.
Now, what do we think we know?
Screaming may even dissolve it, or if it's a living organism, kill it.
How they figure out that there is such a thing as a Tingler is the deaf-mute woman doesn't just faint. She faints at the sight of blood. She seizes up, and something happens to her in which she gets rigid.
Right, because...
Instead of frozen in fear, like a deer in headlights.
Mm-hmm. Because she physically can't scream, so there's that release that's not happening.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I need to up my experiment game here.
There are other things that happen throughout the film, but eventually he gets his hands on an actual Tingler, which I mentioned before, a velvet worm. These things are creepy.
I think it looks like a crawfish or something.
Well, a velvet worm is a real thing. It looks quite a lot like the...
It's like a centipede.
It's got the texture consistency on its flesh. The velvet worm itself, like that of a snail, but it has centipede like legs. And it has two legs right under its big pinchers at the top, which are eyes, but in the movie they're pinchers. And it has a mouth right under those eyes, but right under that are these two legs. But those are modified and they shoot goo.
What kind of goo?
I don't know. Super sticky goo, and it dries. So what they do is they spot a bug that they want to eat, and that bug's like, ho do 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 do, they spit it, and it just sprays out goo strings, and it solidifies. So the bug is stuck in place, and then old velvet worm crawls towards it, bites it, injects it with some enzyme stuff from its mouth, and turns it into a bug slurpee. That's the basis for what the Tingler looks like.
Okay, you have achieved your goal of thoroughly grossing me out.
It's pretty gross. Bug slurpees, everybody. Well, the Tingler just looks like that, and the eyes of the velvet worm are now pinchers.
Very strong pinchers, by the way.
Apparently. Crippling. Like, it can pinch your arm and then you get frozen.
Mm-hmm. The reason why you end up screaming is because you can't take the pain. Something frightens you, and then that activates the Tingler inside of you.
And the Tingler.
And it starts hurting you.
It grows.
It grows, and it starts hurting and hurting. And the reason you scream is because you're in pain from the fear. But you don't know that there's a thing in you causing the pain. Right?
And your scream counteracts the effects of the Tingler itself.
Mm-hmm.
They call it the Tingler because spine tingling. I don't really understand the phrase because my back has never tingled like that.
Well, you're not doing it right.
I'm not getting afraid right?
That's correct.
How do you get afraid right?
You'll find out someday.
Oh, okay.
So his theory is that if somebody could stand the pain long enough to not scream when they're so afraid, then maybe he can learn more about the Tingler.
It's not a theory. That's his goal.
Yeah, okay, that's his goal. So he wants to do it on himself.
So at one point, he takes acid.
Yeah.
It's the first depiction of LSD in a movie.
And it was also legal at the time to take acid.
Yeah.
They hadn't figured out that it was...
harmful hallucinogen. Yeah.
So the reason why he does the acid is because he professes earlier that nothing scares him.
Yeah.
So he takes this drug, and I think David says...
David, what does that stuff do to you?
Well, for one thing, nightmares. You're wide awake, but you're having nightmares.
Yeah.
So he starts hallucinating.
And I'll tell
it's really funny. And
being that this is a William Castle movie, you'd expect some crazy, awesome silliness happening with hallucinations. But that doesn't happen.
No, it's mostly just his dialogue. He's recording what's happening to him because it's an experiment. And he's just saying all these things that are happening to him. I liked when he went over to the window and he obviously opens the window and he's, this window is nailed shut.
Yeah. One of the techniques that they did for the drug trip is to have the warbled lens.
Yeah.
It's either a warbled lens or a funhouse mirror sort of thing that they shoot. And they just sort of twist it as you're looking at whatever the image is. So the image gets warped. Whoa, pioneering drug trip scene. After he does his experiment on himself, he shoots the deaf-mute lady up with acid as well in order for
I didn't know you could shoot up acid.
I guess.
But hey, whatever.
Whatever. He made a cocktail of some sort and shot her up with it. And in order to harvest the Tingler.
He basically wanted to kill her. Or get her close enough to death.
Yeah. We should backtrack a little bit. Previously in the film, he had an argument with his wife and he scared her nearly to death.
Mm-hmm.
Pulls out a gun, shoots a blank at her.
Until she faints,
hardcore. And then he takes an x-ray of her back, and that's where he learns that there's an actual physical thing called the Tingler.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, flash forward. He wants to actually harvest a Tingler out of somebody, and again, he picks a lady, and this lady is the deaf mute. She has this big old experience of fright in her own apartment, and part of that... Okay, you remember Boyz II Men? How their music videos were all black and white, and then suddenly, like, they're wearing blue...
No, I don't remember that so much, but I do... You know those black and white photographs of, like, babies or children, and they're wearing, like, stupid hats?
Yeah, it's the same technique.
And then there's, like, the little boys holding a rose, and the rose is red, but everything else is black and white.
Yeah, it's the same technique.
Yeah.
Exactly the same technique, except with Boyz II Men, they're wearing their giant FUBU blue jeans ensembles. And Timberland boots.
Do they wear those?
I assumed every R&B group did.
That was on the cusp of my awakening, I guess, if you could call it that.
Your awakening?
Well, you know,
this is like a Vanguard Cinema on Cinemax in the early 90s. LB's awakening. Are you, like, coming of age and...
Elby and her Week of Wonders.
Yeah, okay, that's even weirder. Yes, Elby and her Week of Wonders.
No, I mean, where you're at the age of you listen to your parents' music only, and then you finally, you know, you go to middle school or something, and you kind of just start finding out what you want to listen to on your own. Boyz II Men was during that part of my life, and I kind of missed them. Nothing personal against Boyz II Men or any people who like Boyz II Men.
Yeah, okay, whatever. It's a big digression. The point is, there was this technique in the 90s that they started pioneering, probably in the late 80s, about black and white with a little smattering of color here and there. And they did this through a technique called rotoscoping or whatever. But before that, there was no technique. We're watching the scene in which she walks into her bathroom. Everything's black and white. And the film kind of changes.
Yeah, like, the film grain is different.
Yeah, it was the movie shot in stark black and white, and it's actually pretty good shadow and light balance.
Mm-hmm.
And then it changes, and everything is kind of fuzzed out just a little bit. And I supposed, once there's this big reveal, she's over by the
sink.
And
the water coming out of the sink is red, blood red.
It's really vibrant, but everything else is black and white. She's black and white, the walls are black and white, everything else is black and white. As we're watching this, I mentioned they probably shot this all in color, but painted the set and the actor black and white, but left the tap running red with paint or whatever they used
right.
for that.
Uh-huh.
And in doing research, I learned that this was accurate.
Confirmed.
Bing, 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 bing. I win nothing but knowledge, I guess. Knowledge that won't serve me too much after this podcast. But still, I was pretty happy with myself. Something to be proud of. I figured it out.
Good job.
Now, William Castle directed this.
You had something to share about William Castle, didn't you?
Yeah, in 42 seconds.
Hi, Andrew Jemetzko here. If you like what I do and want to help, point your cursor or fiddly digits to patreon.com/Jemetzko. Tossing a few coins in my direction helps keep me fed with food and drink. I mean, what else? While I toil away making art and being insane. What's Patreon, you ask? Well, it's kind of like a GoFundMe or Kickstarter sort of thing. So why not lend us a hand? It'll surely help. That's patreon.com/Jemetzko. GIMETZCO. Thanks a ton.
We interrupt our regular program schedule to bring you the following special report.
Quite some time ago, between the 1940s and the 1970s, there were a few directors whose works in total, to this day, stand the test of time. The inimitable Orson Welles, who brought Martians into our great-grandparents' living rooms through his radio production of War of the Worlds, and who directed the groundbreaking Citizen Kane. The oft-imitated Alfred Hitchcock, whose Psycho inspired later beloved horror fare, and the possible doppelgangers of said directors, Edward D. Wood Jr., whose singular vision aligned him with Welles, and indeed made his work special in spite of his limited skills. And lastly, the focus of this account, William Castle. Castle was a showman, cut from a similar cloth to that of P.T. Barnum. At an early age, much like Ed Wood,
Hollywood, he saw Bela Lugosi perform Dracula live on stage, even wrangling a chance to meet the Hungarian actor, who later recommended Castle for a job with the Road Company for the same play. He worked menial Broadway jobs until one day he contacted Orson Welles and leased a theater from him. This was about the time when Nazi Germany was becoming a thing and made headlines daily here in the US. A German actress he hired had been formally invited by the Nazis to perform for them in Munich. Castle turned this situation to his benefit. He sent the papers a copy of the telegram he claimed to have sent to the Nazis, turning down their request, making his actress the girl who said no to Hitler. Ever the sensationalist, he vandalized the theater with Nazi symbols. This did the trick. The public came out in droves, making the play a success. Throughout the 40s, he worked in Hollywood directing B-movies for Columbia Pictures, and even worked second unit on one of Welles' films, The Lady from Shanghai. Working for Hollywood was fine, but working for himself, now that's where the real freedom was. So he went to work making independent films. Among his catalog are The House on Haunted Hill, tonight's feature, The Tingler, 13 Ghosts, and Homicidal. Each one relied heavily on gimmicks to enhance viewing. Audience participation was a must. In fact, you had no choice but to participate. The House on Haunted Hill was filmed in Emerger, which really wasn't a thing. But what was a thing was the skeleton ghost that floated over the audience by way of a wire rig. Eventually, the audience figured it out, and rowdy kids would throw their candy at the prop for sport and laughs. 13 Ghosts was filmed in
Illusiono,
similar to 3D Anaglyph. Excuse me, that's red and blue cellophane. The viewer would look through the red to see the ghosts, or blue to make them disappear. Spooky. And for his film Homicidal, he had a kind of
fright break,
utilizing a 45-second timer until the climax of the film, in which patrons could vacate the theater if they were too scared and get their money back. Annoyed when folks tried to do so, he set up what was called the Coward's Corner. Here, Schlockmeister and William Castle fan John Waters' own words describe Castle's response.
William Castle simply went nuts. He came up with the Coward's Corner, a yellow cardboard booth manned by a bewildered theater employee in the lobby. When the fright break was announced and you found that you couldn't take it anymore, you had to leave your seat and, in front of the entire audience, follow yellow footsteps up the aisle, bathed in yellow light. Before you reached the Coward's Corner, you crossed yellow lines with the stenciled message, "Cowards keep walking." You passed the nurse, in yellow uniform, I wonder, who would offer a blood pressure test. All the while, a recording was blaring, "Watch the chicken! Watch him shiver in Coward's Corner!" As the audience howled, you had to go through one final indignity. At Coward's Corner, you were forced to sign a yellow card stating, "I am a bona fide coward."
As for the Tingler, the Barnum analog was such that Castle saw himself as a kind of barker, ringleader, and inserted himself into his own films, or trailers, much like his auteur counterpart, Alfred Hitchcock, bringing warning to the audience, and thus challenging them to withstand his gimmicks. Castle went on to direct and produce many more films, even stepping out from the silliness of his trademark fare to produce the extra creepy and truly disturbing Rosemary's Baby. In 1994, Tim Burton directed a loving tribute to Edward D. Wood Jr. with the film Ed Wood. But just 1 year prior, Joe Dante directed a lesser-seen film, Matinee. This film featured John Goodman as Lawrence Woolsey, a B-movie director who rolls his roadshow into Key West, Florida at the same time as the Cuban Missile Crisis. Woolsey is obviously tailored after William Castle, and as such, he seizes the opportunity to turn the local tensions to his benefit by having his silly Adam Age monster movie, Mant, shake Key West to its foundations, quite literally, by use of his gimmick
Rumble-rama,
and uses shills to stir up controversy. And sure, there's a light teen comedy plot around the Woolsey Castle moments, but it's those moments that make the heart of the film, an equally loving tribute to an arguably better director than Ed Wood, William Castle. Incidentally, I think one of cinema's best ever double features is indeed Ed Wood and Matinee.
We now resume our regular program schedule.
Now, the gimmicks for the Tingler, the main gimmick was called Percepto.
Percepto.
Yeah, that's where he attached buzzers, which are actually motors.
Mm-hmm.
So he would mount those under seats
uh-huh.
that would rumble.
Right.
In his autobiography, he said incorrectly that it would electrically shock the patrons. That can't be legal.
No, I wouldn't imagine so.
But it's more like a joy buzzer.
Okay.
So it vibrates to the point uh-huh. of a shock of the senses, but not an electrical shock. So at certain points when a character is in fright
uh-huh.
and the scream happens,
uh-huh.
he would have somebody flip the switch on those things.
And it
would rumble, so the person who it happens under pretty much has no choice but to scream. So, and that would, for the people who don't have that under their seat, would make it sort of a chain reaction through the audience.
Right, you hear someone scream and then you start to scream, like when the lights go out at the mall.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that, thank you. I worked at the mall, LB worked at a different yeah. mall, and sometimes power would go out for some reason or another. And all the way down towards the clothing stores and the children's stores, you would hear young girls and full-grown women
just
in a wave that comes towards you scream. All at once. I can't scream, by the way. I can't scream like that. I can holler. I can rah.
I can't either. I don't have it in me.
Yeah, you're.
I cannot.
You're gonna die from the tingler.
I probably will.
You're gonna be like.
Yeah, well, even that might release it some. So maybe I won't die.
Maybe you won't.
I'll be like.
That's your scream.
Yeah.
So there's that. He tried other ideas for this movie, the gimmicks. He wanted people in the audience who work for him, who know the mm-hmm. script. So when a certain point happens, he would have them roll bean bags behind people's legs so that would startle them. When the tingler gets loose in the theater.
Loose in the theater, yeah.
The silent movie theater is attacked by the tingler.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain points where when that happens, the lights go off in your theater, our living room, and you're supposed to be so terrified because what the heck is going on? And Vincent Price pops up with a warning.
Ladies and gentlemen, please do not panic, but scream! Scream for your lives! The tingler is loose in this theater, and if you don't scream, it may kill you! Scream! Scream! Keep screaming! Scream for your lives!
Look out, it's under the seat!
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's under the seat!
The tingler has been paralyzed by your screaming. There is no more danger. We will now resume the showing of the movie.
Now, that was part of the gimmick, and it didn't exactly work, I think, but it probably would have worked more in a packed theater, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I liked when the screen went white, like the tingler was in the projection booth.
Yeah, it was crawling in front of the
camera. The film went away, and then just this silhouette of tingler crawls by.
So that's supposed to actually screw with the perception of the audience and make them think that it's actually another Joe Dante movie reprised that in Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
I saw Gremlins 2 in the theater where they start doing shadow puppets
uh-huh.
and they make like Abe Lincoln's head and it's obviously animation and it's just a big stupid joke. And then Hulk Hogan shows up and that breaks the whole thing.
Okay, you guys, listen up. People pay good money to see this movie. When they go out to a theater, they want cold sodas, hot popcorn, and no monsters in the projection booth. Do I have to come up there myself? Do you think the Grimsters can stand up to the Hulkster? Well, if I were you, I'd run the rest of Gremlins 2 right now.
Sorry, folks. It won't happen again.
It's obviously like a 30-foot Hulk Hogan on my screen. He's not actually in my audience. Now, if they actually had Hulk Hogan come down in the audience, that would have been totally William Castle-y. So, the shills would also scream.
Mm-hmm.
They would, of course, try to scare folks by turning the vibration thing on. Part of this gimmick was to have the nurses. Now, he's used nurses and other...
Real nurses?
No, probably just his wife or somebody. Hired actresses, local actresses.
Oh.
Dressed as nurses. But they would have release forms so that if you die, they're not held responsible for it.
Oh.
They would have insurance policies that you could take out at the beginning of the film.
Like life insurance.
And the nurses would be there, fake nurse stations and uh-huh. an ambulance parked out front. Now, the price of the buzzers alone was $25,000. That's how much he invested.
That's
in
a lot in 1959.
Yeah, but he would take them, from what I imagine, since it's a road show, what he does mm-hmm. is he takes the movie from theater to theater and they mm-hmm. have a week to install the seats and then uninstall the seats and take them with them.
Right.
That's what I am imagining. It's also mentioned in the movie Matinee.
I'd like to know what theater theater owners actually thought about all this stuff, altering the seats and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, did he ever ruin anything?
They would have to make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah.
So he would have more shills planted just to be fainters.
Oh, okay.
And then the fake ambulance guys mm-hmm. would carry them out on stretchers and stuff like this.
Right.
So Tingler had plants in the audience and the seat vibrator thing
mm-hmm.
that would scare you because it's a thing attacking your butt, basically.
I wonder why it was called Percepto.
Yeah, I don't know. He always had different names uh-huh. for things.
Percepto. This sounds like it would be more of a visual thing.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah, whatever.
So I think so far, as we've seen, and we've only seen a few,
mm-hmm.
which is weird. We've only seen a few Vincent Price movies, yet we've loved him since Michael Jackson's Thriller. And
13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo.
Well, that's you.
Okay.
Not me. I didn't grow up on Scooby-Doo.
I always thought he was cool, though. Like,
No, I didn't grow up on Scooby-Doo, so I didn't right. really experience it. That's all boomerang stuff, and that's I got way late to the game.
Vincent Price is just one of those actors, one of those guys that you always have known who he is.
Yeah, it's true. I don't like the Muppets, and I'm not even annoyed that he's on the Muppets, because that's a pretty cool shot.
Yeah, vampire Kermit.
Yeah,
and
then he gets bit on the neck. That's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent Price, he's cool.
Yeah.
So far, I think this is my favorite Vincent Price movie.
It's fun.
It's fun. It's very well performed. It's nonsensical as all get out with the science.
Yeah, you just go with it.
Yeah, but I really, really like this one.
And you know what? I think William Castle's a good director.
He is and he isn't, because he did that one spooky one that was Sid Caesar in the Haunted House.
Oh, right.
And that was pretty bad. Flesh is Willing or something?
Something like that.
What do you think so far, as you've seen Vincent Price movies?
I like House on Haunted Hill.
House on Haunted Hill. That's also a William Castle movie.
I know. I remember watching it when I was a kid and just being engrossed by it.
House on Haunted Hill.
Yes.
I didn't get to that, honestly, until, forgive me, the remake. Which is a fine remake. And then I saw the original, and I was like, all right.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah, that was when AMC played old movies all the time only.
Yeah. So American movie classics.
American classics.
Yeah, classic movies.
Classic movies from America.
Yeah.
Movies.
Not TV shows. Not TV. Or talk shows. Or reality shows. Oh well, I recommend The Tingler so much.
It's really fun, and I think everyone would enjoy it, unless you're just a stick-in-the-mud fuddy-duddy. I kind of thought this movie was going to be boring, but it wasn't at all.
No, it was, well, we were prepped by The Fly, which is kind of boring. So folks, maybe we'll revisit some William Castle spooky movies in the future.
I think it'd be worth it.
Yeah, I think so too. We gotta figure out which ones. And mm-hmm. of course, get some more Vincent Price flicks in there. After all, it is Vincent Price's laugh. And on that note, I bid you a farewell.
Good night.
This podcast is brought to you by Ouch My Ego. Visit OuchMyEgo.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a word of warning. If any of you are not convinced that you have a tingler of your own, the next time you're frightened in the dark, don't scream.